custodes such as Sri Shima, the divine graces of Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Bhakti Kundra, Ananta Kota Vaishnavinda Kundra, ISKCON founder Acharya, the divine grace of Prabhupada Kundra, Gaur Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutarashamite Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharane Niravishesha Sunyavari Paschat Vesita Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 3. Text number 18-20. Liberation from the illusory energy. So word meanings, Sri Prabhuda Uvacha, Sri Prabhuda said, Karmani, fruitive activities. Arabananam, making endeavors in, dukkha hatyai, for the elimination of distress, sukhaya cha, for gaining happiness, pashyat, one should see, paka, of the result, viparyasvam, contrary outcome, nityanuni charinam, who are coupled as men and women, near none of such persons. Sri Prabhuda Uvacha. Armanya Yayar Banananam. Dukahat Jai Sukhaya Cha. Vashyat Maka Viparyasam. Mituni charinam nirnam. Sri Prabhuda Uvacha. Armanyara banananam. Dukas hatjai sikaya cha. Vashet paka viparyasham. Mituni charinam nirnam. Mituni charinam nirnam. Sri Prabhuda Uvacha. Paramanyara Urbana.
Ramanya Ramana.
Translation and purport of Disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sri Prabhupada said, accepting the roles of male and female in human society, the conditioned souls unite in sexual relationships. Thus, they constantly make material endeavors to eliminate their unhappiness and unlimitedly increase their pleasure. But one should see that they inevitably achieve exactly the opposite result. In other words, their happiness inevitably vanishes and they grow old. As they grow old, their material discomforts increase. Purport. Without the mercy of a pure devotee, it is exceedingly difficult to free oneself from the bodily concept of life, which is the illusory basis of sexual attraction. So read together text 19 and 20, and then I'll read the purport for text 20. Text 19. Nitya dhudena vittena durlabena mamekina deha patyata pasibi tapratir sambitas chalai. Wealth is a perpetual source of distress. It is most difficult to acquire, and it is virtual death for the soul. What satisfaction does one actually gain from his wealth? Similarly, how can one gain ultimate or permanent happiness from one's so-called home, children, relatives, and domestic animals, which are all maintained by one's hard-earned money? Text 20. Evam lokam param vidyan nasvaram kamanitya satulya sikshmetasam yata mandala vartinam. One cannot find permanent happiness even on the heavenly planets, which one can attain in the next life by ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices. Even in material heaven, the living entity is disturbed by rivalry with his equals and envy of those superior to him. And since one's residence in heaven is finished with the exhaustion of pious fruitive activities, the denizens of heaven are afflicted by fear, anticipating the destruction of their heavenly life. Thus, they resemble kings who, though enviously admired by ordinary citizens, are constantly harassed by enemy kings and who therefore never attain actual happiness. So if you think those three verses destroyed any conception of material happiness, wait till we read the purport. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted the following text from the Chandogya Upanishad. Tadyateha karma chitto loka shiyate evam eva mitra punya chitto loka shiyate. One's present status of material pleasure, the result of one's previous work, will eventually be vanquished by time. Similarly, although by executing pious activities one will be elevated to the higher status in the next life, that future situation will also be vanquished. The basis of material enjoyment is the particular body one has acquired. The material body is karmacitta, the accumulated results of one's previous material activities. If one is awarded a body decorated with beauty, education, popularity, strength, and so on, his standard of material enjoyment is certainly high class. On the other hand, if one is ugly, mentally retarded, crippled, or repulsive to others, there is very little hope for his material happiness. In both cases, however, the situation is flickering and temporary. One who has acquired an attractive body should not rejoice, since death will quickly bring an end to such an intoxicating situation. Similarly, one who has taken birth in an obnoxious situation should not lament, since his suffering is also temporary. The beautiful man and the ugly man, the rich man and the poor man, the educated and the foolish, should all endeavor to become Krishna conscious so that they can elevate to their eternal constitutional situation, which is to reside in the planets beyond this material universe. Originally, every living entity is unimaginably beautiful, intelligent, wealthy, and so strong that a spiritual body lives forever. But we foolishly give up this eternal, blissful situation because we are unwilling to meet the condition for eternal life. The condition is that one should be a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Although love of Krishna is the most exquisite ecstasy, surpassing by millions of times the most intense pleasure of the material universe, we foolishly break off our loving affair with the Supreme Lord and artificially try to become independent enjoyers in the material atmosphere of self-delusion and false pride. Even if one reaches the exalted heavenly planets of this universe, he will be afflicted by various types of suffering. Every conditioned soul in the material world wants to become the greatest person. Therefore, one is constantly harassed by his equals who have a similar desire. This situation is commonly termed the rat race of material existence. Even on the heavenly planets, there is a similar rat race for heavenly distinction. Since some persons inevitably excel our own achievements, our hearts burn with envy upon seeing others enjoying the very rewards we have strived for. And because our whole situation is temporary, we must undergo fear, anxiety, and death, even on the heavenly planets. The example given here is very nice. Minor kings may be enviously admired by the ordinary citizens for their wealth, power, and fame, but such kings themselves constantly burn with jealousy, resentment, and fear due to rivalry and threats from other kings. Similarly, modern politicians are constantly harassed by envy and fear. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that the conditioned souls, being eager to acquire material happiness and avoid distress, take shelter of sexual relationships and thus surrender to the hard labor of fruitive activities. Those who are enlightened, however, can perceive the ultimate futility of such gross materialistic endeavors. One's so-called wife, home, children, relatives, bank account, and so on are all temporary phantasmagoria, and even while manifest, they can never give real satisfaction to one's senses. To acquire wealth in this world, one is practically forced to become the killer of his own soul. There is no possibility of acquiring pleasure from materialistic activities since they are performed for temporary senses in the hot pursuit of temporary sense objects. When the conditioned soul achieves his goal, he becomes proud and brags to others as if his achievements were permanent. And when defeated, he is submerged in lamentation. Such a tendency to consider oneself the doer is a sign of weak intelligence, since the fact that the living entity is merely desiring since in fact the living entity is merely desiring within the material body. The body itself is moved by the forces of material nature under the control of God. The relationship of master and servant, father and son, husband and wife, entail exchanges of well-wishing and service that give a sense of material gratification, but such ephemeral devotion can never bring about the eternal absolute benefit of the soul. By such temporary gratification, Maya induces the conditioned soul to wander throughout the material world, pursuing the relative rewards of material nature. According to the subtle laws of karma, the living entities achieve happiness and distress. One cannot obtain happiness by force, no matter how strenuously or how long he tries. Therefore, those whose intelligence is uncontaminated should surrender at the lotus feet of Krishna and give up the ludicrous pursuit of permanent material happiness, a pursuit which can be compared to a dog's chasing its tail. Om Ajnanita Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshadam Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in this series of verses and the ones to follow, we have yet another of the Navayogendras that is imparting lessons to King Nimi, here Prabhuda. I tried to do a little research to find out something about Prabhuda, because I thought that each of the nine Yogendras is speaking on just a little bit different nature aspect of the nature of this material world in answer to King Nimi's questions. So I thought there might be something particular in his background. Usually we find that there's always a background of everybody, and usually they have some particular background that's coming out. Just like we hear about Tukaram, Saint Tukaram. He often speaks very harshly about material life. And it's based on his own experience. He has a very bitter experience in his own married life. And so, in addition to just the material world being such a difficult place, our individual experiences also give us realization that gives some power to our expression of the material world and the illusory things it has to offer. But unfortunately, I couldn't find anything on Prabhuda in particular. But as we go through these instructions and each of the Navayogendras speaks, if anybody finds some background on any one of them, it'd be good for everyone to hear that. So as I mentioned before I started reading the purport, these verses in the purport should convince us of the one sentence that I want to repeat here. One cannot attain happiness by force, no matter how strenuously or how long one tries. This instruction should stand in our heart, or should stand in my heart. But it doesn't stand in my heart, because for some reason or another, despite this clear explanation, and despite such bitter experience for so many lives, still the idea is that, well, I'll be able to enjoy in this material world. And so therefore we find in Srimad Bhagavatam 1 history after another, one instruction after another on these same points, that you can't enjoy in this material world. And you shouldn't try to enjoy in this material world. Rather, you should endeavor to get out of this world. And so, because it's so hard to take that instruction to heart, to live it, we find over and over again the same theme is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. And so what I wanted to do today was to help myself have this instruction stand in the heart, just go over the lives of a few of the saints that are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, that describe their experience in terms of the material nature and the lessons that they've learned. And hopefully we'll be able to imbibe these lessons a little bit more strongly ourselves. So the statement of material nature has been nicely given in this verse and purports. So what do we do about it? Well, there are different things, different ways that we can go about dealing with our situation in the material world. The first one is to seek liberation. To seek liberation as an answer to these difficulties. To extricate ourselves from a world where there's karma, where we act and we're always afraid when the other shoe is going to drop. You know this expression, when the other shoe is going to drop, something happens, but then you know more is coming, and you're just waiting in fear. When is that other shoe going to drop? When is the next misery going to come? And so the natural response to that is to get out, to seek liberation, to live our lives in such a way that we don't have to worry about future distress and the different maladies of this material body. So there are those great sages that have taken this path in trying to deal with the miseries of the material world. One of them, described in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is Sobari Muni. Now, I think you're probably all familiar with Sobari Muni. He was a sage who was meditating underwater in the Yamuna. And he so much wanted to get away from material life that he developed a yogic city that allowed him to live underwater so he wouldn't have to be disturbed by any of the material interaction. How many people in normal society are under the water in the Yamuna meditating? I mean, there's nobody there. He didn't have to interact with people. He didn't have to engage in different activities of karma to gain this or that. He wasn't trying for wealth. All these things were given up in an attempt to escape the miseries of the illusory existence of this world. But the lesson we can learn from Sobari Muni is that it's not so easy. Of course, he didn't choose an easy path, but still, it's not so easy to give up these material desires which impel us on and on in this illusory world. These desires are very deep-rooted, and Sobari Muni, he experienced that. Now, Sobari Muni also had some impetus, some help in falling from his spiritual position. Does anybody know just dealing with the material energies alone, it's enough to make us fall just trying, but he had some help in that. Does anybody know? Yeah, he made an offense to a Vaishnava. If we make offenses to Vaishnavas, it just makes it that much harder to get out of this material world. It's hard enough. We don't need to make offenses. But let me just read you what Sobari Muni said and what lessons he hopes we'll learn from his situation. This is from the sixth chapter of the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it tells the benefits as well as the detriments of this type of an approach of taking severe austerities. Because Sobari Muni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly, his severe austerities resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maidservants and manservants, and varieties of parks with crystal clear water lakes and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with various flowers, birds chirped and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. Sobari Muni's home was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments, and arrangements for bathing, and there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands, and palatable dishes. Thus surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives. Does anybody know how many wives he had? 50. He had 50 wives. Huh? Yeah, there's a reason why he had 50 wives. I think we all know that. But these things came from his performance of austerities. This is also another illusion. We try sometimes to think, well, if I just become very austere and get out of this material world, get away from the allurements, that I'll break the cycle. But actually, he performed his austerities, and he got all these opulences as a result after his fall. It's interesting. I was just reading last night about Prabhupada in Mayapur, and there was a description of a story that apparently a devotee, it says he was from Africa, he came there, and he wanted to perform austerities. So he was, you know, living in a hut. He wasn't living in any of the buildings, living in a hut on the land and chanting 120 rounds a day and doing this austerity, that austerity. And Prabhupada knew he was there. And one time Prabhupada was going on a walk, and the devotee would tell him, oh, now this devotee is doing this austerity. And Prabhupada had enough finally. He waved his hand. All nonsense, he said. You know, all nonsense. Rather, he should take his time, you know, trying to love Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. And so, austerity, Sobari Muni, by his austerities, he gained all these things. But this, let me tell you the lesson he wants us to learn from this. Mandata, the king of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, was struck with wonder when he saw the household opulence of Sobari Muni. Thus he gave up his false prestige and his position as emperor of the world. In this way, Sobari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied. He had 50 wives, all this opulence, but he was not at all satisfied. Just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. Thereafter, one day while Sobari Muni, who was expert in chanting mantras, was sitting in a secluded place, he thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish. Alas, while practicing austerities, even within the depths of the water, and while observing all the rules and regulations practiced by saintly persons, I lost the results of my long austerities simply by association with the sexual affairs of fish. Everyone should observe this fall down and learn from it. A person desiring liberation from material bondage must give up the association of persons interested in sex life and should not employ his senses externally in seeing, hearing, talking, walking, and so on. One should always stay in a secluded place, completely fixing his mind at the lotus feet of the unlimited personality of Godhead. And if one wants any association at all, we should associate with persons who are similarly engaged. So Sobari Muni, due to his offense to Garuda, became agitated by under the water seeing the sexual affairs of fish, and he calls his fall down all this material opulence he had. That's, we should note that. All this material opulence we read of, he calls that his fall down. So we need to be careful about how we deal with the material energy. It's very powerful. Now, there are examples in the Bhagavatam about those who are just completely detached from material existence right from the time of their birth. We have that example in the life of Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami was so detached from this material world that he didn't want to come out of the womb. He was in his mother's womb for 16 years. And then finally, when Krishna himself came and convinced him to come out of the womb, the first thing he did as soon as he came out of the womb was what? He left home. Oh, I'm out of here. You know, I got no attachment. His father, Vyasadeva, was shocked. My son, come back. What was the echo? What was the response? The trees echoed. So Sukadeva Goswami was completely detached from any material endeavor. And he gained that detachment how? Who knows how he gained that detachment? I think you know. Yeah, you know. Yeah, by hearing Bhagavatam. By hearing his father recite Srimad Bhagavatam, he became detached even within the womb. And so when he came out and actually saw this material nature, he was not attracted at all. And so that's a key for us. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is a real way to deal with the illusory energy here, to break the energy. Now, performing austerities is one way to deal with this material nature, to try to get free from it. Another is just seeking some peace with the material energy, making peace with the material energy. You don't bother me, I won't bother you. Shanta, or being satisfied, let's say, being satisfied. In Ishopanishad, the first two mantras talk about this. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside at his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So if one is satisfied with what one gets naturally as his quota, then the Ishopanishad goes on to say that one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in this way, but that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So one response to this illusory energy is to just seek satisfaction, be satisfied with whatever comes, and not strive for happiness or not strive for distress. So what's wrong with that kind of solution to the situation, our situation in the material world? What's wrong with that type of an approach? I mean, is there anything wrong with that type of an approach?
Soul remains hungry.
The soul remains hungry. Within his body and mind, the soul remains hungry. Yeah, okay. Anything else that might indicate that this might not be the best way? It's a mode of goodness, right? It doesn't really lead to liberation necessarily, does it? We can stay in this material world and we can live here in a happy kind of way, in a mode of goodness, but Bhagavad Gita tells us that the modes are always in competition. And at any moment, some wave may come along that shakes us from our situation. Despite that, it's still good to be satisfied. And this is instructed by Vamandeva to Bali Maharaj. When Lord Vamandeva appeared before Bali Maharaj, you know, he came to chastise him, basically, for being so ambitious that he wanted to take over the whole universe. And he taught him some lessons on being satisfied that are always good when we're dealing with this material energy. So this is from the 8th canto, 19th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Vamadeva speaking to Bali Maharaj after Bali Maharaj offered him whatever he wanted. If I were not satisfied with 3 paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the seven islands consisting of nine varshas. Even if I possessed one island, I would hope to get others. We have heard that although powerful kings like Maharaj Prithu and Maharaj Gaya achieved proprietorship over the seven dvipas, they could not achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. Again, this theme is there again and again. They could not find satisfaction or the end of their ambitions. And these are all very powerful kings, much more powerful than us. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny, for discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy even with possessing the three worlds. Material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But one who is satisfied, by which is obtained by destiny, is fit for liberation from this material existence. Particularly, a Brahmin who is satisfied with whatever is provincially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied Brahmin decreases as fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only three paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased. For the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. Valuable instructions about how to live life. And these instructions are given by Vamadeva to Maharaj Bali, who is the king of the demons. And again, this theme of not being able to be satisfied. It's not our deficiency. The materialists will tell you, you guys just haven't got it together. That's why you can't enjoy. That's what they'll tell you. But it's not true. It's not true. No one can enjoy in this material nature. It's just the nature of the beast. And we should understand that. Now, there's one final way in which one can deal successfully with the material nature. And that is to positively engage oneself in the devotional service of the Lord. And one can do that from any position. In the, what canto is it here? In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the history of the Haryasvas is explained. The Haryasvas were sons of Daksha who were meant by Daksha to propagate the universe. And so what he did is he sent them to do austerities to prepare themselves for material enjoyment. Prepare yourself for material enjoyment by doing austerities. But they went and they did austerities and it purified their hearts. And Narada Muni happened along the way and he saw that they've invested so much time in purifying their heart by performing austerities. Why don't I just like push him over the edge and have him take the devotional service? So that's what he did. He pushed them over the edge and they all became devotees, 10,000 of them. And that they gave up this desire to try to enjoy in this material world, fulfilling the order of their father to propagate. They said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to worship Krishna. And so, just worshiping Krishna from any circumstance we find ourselves in, we start to worship Krishna. That will be beneficial. And to prove that, I'm going to point you to two bhajans by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he explains the truth. There's a bhajan that we commonly know as Gaigora Madhuswara. The actual name is Srinama from the Gitavali. And in that, there's a verse that describes how we should take the devotional service. Grihe tako vane tako sada hari bole tako suke duki bulo nako padane hari nam korore. Whether you are a householder or a sannyasi, constantly chant Hari Hari. Do not forget this chanting, whether you are in a happy condition or a distressful one. Just fill your lips with the Hari Nam. No matter where we enter devotional service from, the sufferings of the material existence that are described in these verses today, the austerity that one undergoes and one undertakes, wherever your situation, in the forest or in the home, one should just chant, take shelter of the holy name of the Lord. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement, and he confirms this again in another of his bhajans, Sudha Bhakata, where he says that once, he says, Goloka Vrindavan appears in my home whenever I see the worship and service of Lord Hari going on there. Upon seeing the Ganges, the water which is a river of nectar emanating from the lotus feet of the Lord, my happiness knows no bounds. So our own home can be transformed into Goloka Vrindavan if the worship of Lord Hari is going on there. So what does that mean we should do in our homes? Just enjoy with family and household animals? Who has household animals? is that what we're supposed to do in our home? Is that where we're going to find happiness, satisfaction, contentment? No, I mean, if we have worship, if the worship of Krishna is going on there, then it's transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. So he doesn't say leave home, leave all these things. He says make your home into Goloka Vrindavan. So those are some thoughts on these verses and comment or question by anybody on this? Yes, Amrish. Done, ready? Okay. That is Dharma, ladies first.
I was just thinking about Narada Muni, how he has, he always preaches to people, and like Haryashas you were mentioning, he preached to them so they didn't go into household life. I think all the examples that I can think in my mind is about people, when he preaches, they get out of the household life. Is it because it's harder in the householder life?
Well, is it harder in household? It depends who you're talking about. It's hard for. Is it hard for a Kali Yuga person? Is it harder for them in household life than in sannyas life, renounced life? I doubt it. Renounced life is very hard. I mean, it's very hard. If you can be Krishna conscious in family life, then why not be merciful to others by being, by giving them a Krishna conscious atmosphere and make it easy on yourself by not artificially renouncing. Sobari Muni, I mean, who, we laugh, Sobari Muni fell down because he saw the sex life of fish, but I'm telling you, if you're meditating underwater and you have that ability, for a long time, it's not that you're incapable of spiritual achievement. It's just that it's so hard to give up this material contamination. And so better take the path that's more advantageous. Now, of course, that's different at different individuals. There are individuals who are naturally very austere and satisfied in that kind of life, and that's wonderful. That should be encouraged. But for the majority of people, we can see. I mean, come here in the morning and see how many brahmacharis there are. Yamaraj and Punyakirti, I think that's all you'll see here. You know, and this is a wonderful community, great community with wonderful, great devotees. So why not make it easy? Taking the hard path is not necessarily advised. You know, you have to do it the hard way because it has to be hard or otherwise it's not good. I don't think so. Not much.
When you were mentioning about enjoying being with family members and household animals, now I'm wondering if that means like physical animals running on four legs, or one who are not engaged in devotional service, then it's termed like living like animals. So if the family members are termed as animals, because well, you're not living a Krishna conscious life. And the other thing is that...
Well, I can say one thing about that, and it's a different thing. Concern about household animals. I thought you were going to something like what Prabhupada's father's example was, is that he would put the milk out for the rats at night, and those household animals, he was taking care of them also by putting the milk out at night for them. So those kind of household animals, he was even kind and living in a Christian conscious way with them. You know, what to speak of others.
Yeah, but with those animals, those weren't like, let's say, licensed animals, or they weren't like invited because they were there. So then he took his responsibility to give them some Krishna consciousness in terms of prasadam. But for us, where we would go out of our way spending hundreds and thousands of dollars to maintain animals to bring it in, you know, then that can be a different situation. A difference with that.
I don't know what to say. Yeah. Anybody can say anything? Sukara? I don't know what to say, Guru. So I just asked you a question. Just ask, you had a separate question. Okay.
I felt like I missed something when you were talking about Prabhupada and devotee chanting 120 rounds, and Prabhupada said all nonsense. You know, because generally you would think of someone seriously chanting that that is loving Krishna, that is devotional service.
Well, I think Prabhupada's point was that this devotee was going through all kinds of austerities, extra things. And I think Prabhupada's response was better that he engage in some service, practical service, than just doing austerities. And that the austerities seemed to be a little... Especially when someone went to Prabhupada, this devotee is doing this now. It's almost like doing it for what? For show? But you're doing some austerity. That's, in that sense, all nonsense.
And I had one other question. A devotee or a brahmana, he's always satisfied with whatever situation he's in. But so many devotees, you can't help but think, well, if I had a little more wealth, if I had a little more, then I would be able to do so much more service. I'd have more time to chant. You know, it's like a very common thought process. You know, you want the more time. You want the luxury of being able to chant your own peacefully, come to class. But there's so many devotees that are so busy. You know, they have to go to work early. They're not able to do it. So maybe just some advice in that department.
Well, I can give you 1970s advice, or I can give you 2016 advice.
Yeah, well, 2000 advice seems a lot harder than the 1970 advice.
Yeah, 1970 advice would be that
join the temple.
Join the temple. We all live together. It's a common thing. If we all do this together, it costs less, you know, and But you know, that's 1970s advice. 2016 advice, don't try for so much. Lead a simple life. That's what living together in the 70s was about, leading a simple life and not needing a lot. I tend to have expanded my needs, and therefore the pressure is on. So lead a simple life, be satisfied. Again, these things aren't easy. I'm not pretending to say them as if it's all easy, but there's something to the simple instructions that Prabhupada has given.
It seems if we had followed Prabhupada's advice in terms of the, you know, Varnashram and doing the farms, that it would have been a lot easier for people to live simple lives.
Yeah, plain living, high thinking, simple living and high thinking, like that. It's complicated. Dharmaraj, maybe I can get it this time.
I seem to have a pretty bad karma in this of ending up in conversations on very many occasions as on simple life, and still can't quite get it as, when you say simple life, what do you mean? You know, how can you describe it in the community of what is simple life? It seems like everybody has a different idea. Well, my simple life means to have, you know, $2 million worth, or my simple life means only, you know, like that. So,
well, I think simple life.